Welcome to After Hours at the Radio Book Club, a collaboration between KGNU and the Boulder Bookstore. I'm Maeve Conran with KGNU. As always, my co-host Arsene Kashkashian of the Boulder Bookstore joining me in studio, and we have our author that we've been reading for the month of November, Robert McBrearty, joining us. Now, tune in and listen to the radio broadcast edition of the Book Club because we delved into some of the stories that are part of this collection, The Problem You Have. But Robert, this is a collection of short stories. Short stories themselves are a complete art form because they really are these snapshots in time, but you have to pack a lot in. And how do you approach doing a short story, especially all of these stories are, as we said in the other interview, we're meeting people on what is arguably the worst day of their lives in many ways. They're in very extreme circumstances and we meet them for a sliver of that particular experience. So how do you decide at what point we're going to meet them during this experience?
Well, I usually want to start with the action almost like immediate. That's one thing about it, you know. So if there's going to be background, then I might introduce that later. So I kind of try to get the main action going. But, you know, one thing I find is that there's stories that I don't finish. That is, you know, I'll have some false attempts before I come to one that I go, okay, this one's feeling pretty good. Like I'm gonna finish this one, and to me that really has to do with the opening. And you know, we often think, okay, writers need to write an opening that readers will like and be pulled into the story, and that's true. But I also find that that's true for the writer. You know, like for me, I have to write the first paragraph and go, hey, I'm into this. You know, this paragraph that I just wrote is calling me to write the next paragraph. And then the story has to start taking shape for me pretty well, pretty early on. You know, like I don't need to know everything, you know, kind of finding my way through the story. But I have to sort of have at least some sense of direction, or it just kind of fizzles. You know, I can't just kind of keep writing randomly, you know, for too long. It's got to sort of funnel into a particular kind of trajectory or storyline. And so that's why sometimes those stories, like in this collection, there's a lot of stories with, you know, tension and danger. And so once I get to that danger, then, you know, maybe the story kind of starts to unfold a bit on its own.
So you've been writing, this is your fifth collection.
Yeah.
So you've been writing for a while now, long time.
Oh, gosh, Arsene. Yeah, if you want an exact, let's see. I started when I was 15, and I'm now 71. So let's see, do the math here. Is that 55? Let's see. No, I'm something. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. A heck of a long time.
Yeah. How do you feel you've changed as a writer from either grad school or your first collection to this collection? Like what's different, and maybe what's the same for you?
Gosh, let's say going way back, you know, I was like scribbling stories in high school, and then early on in college, and I'm sure that I know that I'm a better writer now than I was then. You know, it's like, you know, I'm sure that most of those stories were kind of very very rough, and for a while I was doing kind of like a Ernest Hemingway sound, which is, you know, fine sound if you're Ernest Hemingway. But at a certain point, one of my teachers in college, at this point, like at the University of Texas, said, why don't you try some comedy? I think he was just a little tired of reading my stories. And I tried some comedy, and he said, well, yeah, not bad. Yeah. So anyway, it kind of opened up a new door. So sometimes as a writer, you learn something or that you hear something or whatever where you have a little bit of a breakthrough. So it was funny. I mean, it was just a simple comment. He said, why don't you try some comedy? And I wrote a story. I'm sure it wasn't that funny, but it opened up a door to, okay, I could write funny.
Well, so many of your stories in this collection have a real combination of comedy and real darkness as well, but there you manage to balance the tones really well. There was one story that I just thought was hilarious in such a cringy way. And I think because so many people, I'm sure, will have been in a similar situation. And it's this young couple who are going to dinner at somebody's house, and the guy is just not into it, but they're the landlords of his wife or his girlfriend, and so they kind of feel they have to go. And right from the get-go, the whole thing is weird, and they're really extreme, acting so inappropriately. There's alcohol involved, and I was just cringing, but, you know, really, really funny.
Oh, thanks, babe. Yeah, well, you know, that one... definitely based on a true experience. My wife and I went to this couple's house, and it just turned into an insane night. I mean, this story exaggerates it to some extent, but it was pretty nutty just as in itself. And I think I was also thinking a little bit about the play Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf? You know, and just how could I make this couple just absolutely you know, horrible? And you go, what? What are, and I'm sort of a person who doesn't go to many parties, you know, like I just don't go to many parties. So being in a situation like that was, you know, really, really very, very uncomfortable.
Well, it was really funny because the younger couple have this realization like, oh my God, I really hope we never turn out like that. And then I was reading it going, I would hope nobody would ever see me like the crazy couple. You know, if we ever invite anybody over to our house, I hope they're not going, oh my God, I got to go hang out with these weirdos. And then to have an awful experience and us to be completely oblivious. So that was a really fun read, but also in a cringe way going, oh my God, because we've all had experiences like that.
That was, you know, so you have, I think we talked in the radio interview, like most of the stories are pretty realistic, but you do have some things that are a little over the top or thing. And you had a story about the prisoners on an island that seemed kind of wacky, you know, and had some humor to it. Like, it's just, they're outside of the gates of the prison, and the warden is basically saying, you're going to come in, you're going to love it, you're going to get 3 square meals, everything's easy around here, And the prisoners look around. And they're like, "What? Do we even have to go in? Like, no guards seem to have weapons." And so that was a short. But tell me about that story.
Gosh, you know, I think that was one of those ones where I wrote a few lines, and I looked at them and I thought, I see this whole thing. You know, that there's these. I don't exactly know where the idea came from, but I remember writing the opening lines about being standing outside the building, and yeah, the guards don't have any guns or anything, and it's just kind of like an honor system that they'll stay there, and yeah, that way, you know, I'm kind of curious about that one myself, Arson, because sometimes I can sort of like trace where a story came from, but I definitely knew that after a few lines that I wanted to write that story, and that, you know, they decide just to, well, nobody's really keeping them there. They're going to escape.
Yeah, this idea of having a prison on an island. Yeah, I mean, obviously we've Alcatraz, but I was thinking of Papillon as well. Yeah. But usually it's very, you can't get off the island because of the currents or, you know, you just, or the sharks. Yeah. But this one, they're like, well, hey, there's a boat. Let's just go.
There's a dock.
That's right. There's a dock. Yeah. And, you know, it's sort of like a little bit of the, you know, the modern element, like, well, let's just, I Googled it already and there's a dock over there. You know, you get on the.
That was very entertaining and very kind of a quick hit. So when you've done stories of varying sizes, like I felt like most of your stories are, say, like, I don't know, 10 pages long or something, right? But you've written a novella, you've written short stories, 1-2 pages in some of your other collections. The length of something, is that come at when you're writing that first paragraph and deciding about it, or does that something later? And have you ever thought, or I shouldn't say this, but do you have some novels in a drawer that you haven't quite done, or is novella the longest thing you've written?
No. I'll give you a little story about a novel that never got published. But it was a full length novel, and it actually. Came real close to getting published. It was represented by an agent, and it went to Houghton Mifflin, and it passed through several levels of editors. You know, it's like junior editor, upper. I kept going and going and going. And then it. And meanwhile, I was like, what was I doing? I was teaching at a. Well, I was teaching at a community college, and I thought, oh, I just quit actually because I thought I was going to get this big advance, and so anyway, senior editor turned it down. It was crushing. That was crushing. That was a long time ago. And next week, I was working in a warehouse, and then eventually, I got back to teaching again.
There were a few teachers in the book.
There are a few teachers, yeah. So I taught quite a bit. You know, I taught my first class in Mexico that's where I actually graduated. My undergraduate from was in San Miguel de Allende, Mexico, a place called the Instituto Allende, and I ended up doing some teaching while I was there. I was like 21 years old. You know, it's kind of weird. So I had kind of a teaching background, but I would, and then at the University of Iowa, I went to the Iowa Writers' Workshop. I had a teaching fellowship there, so I taught there. But a lot of times with these, adjunct part-time college jobs, not really enough to live on. So I'd sometimes be, working, teaching, and then also like working at the Y or doing all sorts of other things as well. And then eventually, I got on with the University of Colorado, and that was better. And so I think some of those stories come out of that academic background.
There's one story that I thought was really funny, and it's sort of this idea of the mind games as well, that, you know, these characters are fighting a big, there's sharks or there's a gunman or there's, something extreme happening. But a lot of the demons are fighting, they're actually in their head. I mean, they're just battling their own experiences. Mm-hmm. But there's one that kind of like leans into this mind game thing where there's a teacher and there's this one fingered push.
Oh, yes.
Talk a little bit about that, because I was trying to visualize it. And I was is this an actual thing? I want to actually try this and just push somebody with one finger.
Well, that was kind of a little bit of an exaggeration, but based on a Tai Chi teacher I had that I studied with in California, and then, we did workshops with him for many years. And he was like a very extremely talented Tai Chi teacher. And he could do things like just touch somebody with his finger and push him out. And so it was kind of, I was thinking of that a bit, when I wrote that that story. I'm not quite sure why I said, I used to work in a mental hospital. So I think somehow that was sort of juxtaposed with the one finger push. Like, I often find it's kind of a matter of combining things. You know, you pull something from here, you pull something from there, and you create a new reality out of that combination. So taking that old Tai Chi teacher and then taking the mental hospital, sort of putting them together.
Yeah, and he can't teach it though. He can show it. He shows them it, but he's like, I can't teach you it. And I thought that was kind of interesting, because with all these academics and the poetry professor in the one story is. Who knows if he's really teaching anybody anything at this point in his career.
Right,
so you had some teachers that maybe weren't doing all that much teaching at this point.
Yeah. Or they're wondering, if they're accomplishing anything. Yeah. And I think that, say, with the Tai Chi teacher, it was kind of, I think he probably felt like that. Like, I can keep showing you guys this, but I don't know why you're not going to get it. One that he didn't want to teach it really, but it was just like, I don't know. I don't think it's going to get across, And I guess sometimes you feel like that maybe as a writing teacher too, you're trying to get something across and you're going, is anybody really getting this,
Well, do you just have a notebook or like an mental list when you're out and about and you either meet a character or there's a situation and it just sparks something where you're like, this could be a nugget of something? Because there's so many really interesting characters, not even just the central characters, but some of the, other characters that they're interacting with. I'm wondering, are these, pulled from inspiration or pulled from experiences you've had?
Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that, Maeve. Yeah, I do a lot of little scribbling, you might say. I think of it, actually, I call it that. I'm going to do some scribbling. And that sort of takes the pressure off in a way. And I often go out with a notebook and a pen and sit in coffee shops and, little ideas come to me and I'm just sort of scribbling them down. And then something maybe catches my attention as I want to do, you know, more with this particular scribbling. And I'm glad you mentioned about the characters, because that's what I think Arson asked, actually, in the earlier interview, we talked about how have things in your writing changed over time. And I think that's one thing I do more of now, especially maybe in this collection, is spread the action around more to different characters. You know, so I think when I was first writing, there was a lot of just I, you know, and not much with the other characters. And I thought, well, it's kind of like with, I was thinking a little bit like with acting. You want every character to kind of contribute something. And so I think that's kind of has been a change in my writing when I write a story, of thinking about all the auxiliary characters in there.
Yeah, well, the stories feel full-bodied.
Yeah, like I think that helps.
You know, we mentioned in the earlier interview that some of the stories have witnesses, but then those witnesses take action. So at first they might be just witnessing a fight, but next thing you know, they're hurtling down the road with with somebody in their car. And so, yeah, I really enjoyed that. Who do you like to read at this point in time now? Or is it the same? Have you stuck with some favorites for the last 40 years, or do you discover new people?
Well, I actually pick up a lot of literary journals because that's where I primarily publish. So I'm kind of interested to see what they publish. So because of that, I'm seeing a lot of short story writers. Then I like to read the anthologies, like the Pushcart Prize and Best American Short Stories and O. Henry. So it's not like I'm reading one writer a whole lot, at least with the short stories. Sometimes I like to go back, some of the old favorites. You know, there was Tobias Wolff and John Cheever, Ernest Hemingway. Laurie Moore, Lauren Groff, Flannery O'Connor, you know, and they might do like, you know, rereads of certain stories of theirs that they wrote. Mm-hmm. And then oddly enough, I like reading the long Russian novels, even though I'll never write anything like a long Russian novel. You know, I doubt if, even when I write a novel, I bet it won't be more than a couple hundred pages. So, I wanted to mention I'm working on a novel right now. And it's been in progress for maybe like 10 years. And I've set it aside a number of times. And, but I think it's actually getting closer now. So,
and what made this idea turn into a novel as opposed to a short story?
Let me think. Well, actually, you know, I got a central plot line, and then once I established that plot line, things started to fill out, and I think maybe that was no plot lines I'd had before had really seemed to call for, say, a 300 page treatment or even a 200 page treatment. It's kind of like what the story calls for in a way. That's why I also like writing those real little flash fictions that are, you know, page, two pages, and sometimes that seems like the right length for that particular story.
Yeah, these stories, some of them were 19, 20 pages, and were bursting at the seams. Like if it's extremely tightly written, I feel like, and as much is happening as possible in 20 pages. So it's not surprising to me that maybe you're starting to burst out and you're not starting to, but, thinking like, I could see where some of these stories you could have, I'm not, you know, or somebody could have, you know, like have enough elements to hold up 40 or 50 pages. If I had to guess, you know, like there's structurally, there's a lot going on and lots of interesting characters. And so I really enjoyed it, and I look forward to seeing what the novel is.
Great,
do you find
thanks.
It's a very different writing process, a short story versus a novel?
Well, you know, one of the biggest things is that with a novel, there's a lot of daily momentum, you know, because you've been working on this thing, and then when you return to it, you know, you pretty much know, well, I'm going forward with it here, there, you know. And whereas a short story, when you finish a story, there can be a real flat time of when you're waiting for the next one to come along. And so that one thing I enjoyed about the working on this novel is that I knew what I was going to work on each day. And I think it's pretty much ready. It'll need more work again, I'm sure. But I think maybe in the new year, I'll get it off to an editor and, you know, publisher, see what happens.
Well, we look forward to that when it comes out. But in the meantime, we've really enjoyed reading your latest book, The Problem You Have, A Collection of Stories by Robert McBurty. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, mate. And thank you, Arson. Oh, may I mention one other thing?
Please.
So on November the 16th, I will have two of my short stories read at Stories on Stage in Denver. And I just wanted to mention that show because they've been very good to me. Over the years, they've used my stories by professional actors on several occasions. And it's been one of the big thrills for me as a writer to...
Which stories are going to be?
Well, one of them is not in this collection. It's called The Briefcase. And then one of them is in this collection. It's called The Next Town Over.
I love that story because I just love the ambiguity of not having a name on the town, but it's always the next town over.
Well, the theme of this particular in Stories on Stage usually has a guiding theme. And this one is called Late Bloomers. And it's about issues having to deal with aging. So those two stories seem to fit in well. And anyway, the actors do a wonderful job. And so...
Well, sounds good. Yeah. Well, Robert, thank you so much.
Thank you, Maeve. Thank you, Arson. It's been a pleasure.
Well, for After Hours at the Radio Book Club, I'm Maeve Conran with KGNU. As always, my co-host, Arson Keshkashian. Thank you, Arson.
Thank you, Maeve.